Chris.
Oh, he's so relaxed.
Heath, Disney did not acquire Epic Games for $1.5 billion.
I don't know what else $1.5 billion bought them.
I'm referring to the air quotes news story you started off our episode 100 with.
I didn't start it off. There was many resting on our laurels, and I think I just sneaked it in.
As soon as I drove home, I had to seek out this information. I'm like, how did I miss this megaton news story?
Acquisition
drop?
Of the century.
No one in my circles is discussing this. What gives? It didn't happen. That's what gives. Heath, Disney just made an investment into Epic Games to obtain a single-digit percentage stake in the company.
Single digit?
You can't buy Epic Games for $1.5 billion. They're valued at more than $20
billion. Sorry, I heard B.
Did you read half a news headline and like, hey, I can bring this to my video game podcast. No further investigation required.
You know what? Good thing my Pulitzer Award winner co-host, Chris, to make sure that Mobius Tubes is the most reputable show on your ears.
I'm putting you on blast because now this fake news is immortalized on our 100 episode.
You totally could have cut it out.
Totally could have cut it out, but it was too much fun to get to roast you right now. So I left it in there.
All right.
Anyway, that's the corrections section. How are you, Heath?
I was better. Chris.
Hey.
We have as many episodes as Dalmatians.
You're right. Also, now we can teach introductory college courses.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. All right. What's our syllabus? I mean, that was another bit that we would have done is the video gaming syllabus.
Yeah, that's been bouncing around in the ether forever.
Yep. Homework assignment is play Portal.
I need to replay Portal, apparently.
I guess so.
So I can stop snubbing it. This is episode 101 of Mobius Tubes, a video game podcast, being recorded on March 3rd, 2024. Otherwise, I thought episode 100 was great.
Heath. Immaculate.
Yeah. Lived up to its reputation. Man, I wish you were at game day this morning. People had thoughts on it.
Oh, because you played Horse's Carriage finally.
Oh, no. That still has not happened.
All right.
We just sat around sniffing our own farts, playing card games all day.
That's my type of crowd.
We played more bacon.
My mouth just waters at the thought of it. Chris, I played a game.
I've heard about this. Why don't we get right on into it?
I played a man with many fingers.
What customer service we provide. Thomas makes a request. We're back the very next episode having delivered.
Did I get the name right? The SEO for this game is horrible. Oh, a hand with many fingers. Did I say that right? I said the man.
Okay.
But that's funny because Michael Hand is the primary antagonist.
So the man is a hand.
Very, very
and
good.
And the hand is a man. Okay, yeah. I'm with you.
Thomas brought us this game, and boy, did it live up to its vertical slice. Bailey and I cracked it open, beat it in one sitting, as you're expected to.
Okay.
The primary source of enjoyment for this game was its elevator pitch. Just the rows of cold case document banker's boxes on these racks in the basement, thinking those are full of clues that we're going to do on the next case. Although this one, the game is just one and done case.
Okay.
You're a detective and you're just burning the midnight oil trying to solve this red twine corkboard crime.
It's not a cold case, is it? It's a recent crime?
No, it takes place in Reagan administration. January 1980 is the latest it goes.
Okay.
Ask me questions, because I liked it a lot, and the scariest part of the game, Bailey and I disagree.
Interesting.
Yeah.
On what vector do you disagree?
She thought the scariest part of the game was when you heard footsteps upstairs while you were in the basement. Scariest thing for me, you go to open a box and then a message appears that just says, this box is empty. And I thought, oh, a murderer is behind me.
Okay.
That's the immediate conclusion I jumped to.
What modes of interaction do you have to sift through evidence?
Looking with your eyeballs. You can't even flip the document over and hope for clues on the back.
Okay.
It's full, only front-facing clues in this police department.
Not a single double-sided piece of paper.
Which, if you're a criminal, now you're just going to write all the most nefarious deeds on the back, knowing that the cops are like, well, I see a photograph of three guys on the front of this page. That's all there is to see.
How are you inputting the answers you've solved in your head? Like famously, other detective games we liked, Case of the Golden Idol, that's Mad Libs format.
Right.
Where, how does this one work?
This is Who, Where, When.
Who, Where, When?
It's pretty also Mad Libs.
Okay.
If you get the right, those three criteria, you will solve the game whether you want to or not.
Or not? Like you're still busy investigating, but you just stumble on the answer?
Yeah, I mean, after we beat the game, there was a credits mode where all the clues that you missed would populate.
Oh,
and
okay.
You realize, oh, had I looked into that CIA operative's activities in the Middle East in 1969, I would have found that newspaper clipping.
I see.
But I was too busy investigating that guy's Vietnam activity.
How capital I indie is this game?
Ooh, very.
Okay.
It is very much, this is the kind of thing that you would bring to the big studio to turn it into a Disco Elysium.
More of like a proof of concept kind of a greater game, maybe?
Right, yeah.
Nothing in the production values to really write home about?
No, they did as much as they could with the format that they had. They pulled an Undertale.
They got that minimum viable product out the door.
Right.
Where does it fall in our Mobius Tube's canon of great detective games?
Oh, I thought you were going to say on the top 100 games I've ever played. This is barely a game. It's more like a proof of concept.
Okay.
Those tabletop detective games that Bailey and I have played like a couple of.
Oh, yeah. That you can get in the
easily
mail.
Easily make the transition into the on the screen. We didn't actively use the red twine to connect ideas, even though the board was getting heavily papered like a high school a cappella sign-up. How does it rank on the detective things? It was more fun than Shadows of Doubt, but less fun than Case of Golden. It's going to be more fun than Danganronpa, but less fun than Ace Attorney.
And you know this because you just counted the neurons.
Of alternate universe? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, people had questions for you about that at game day today.
I can totally answer all those questions.
Okay.
They need only write in to MobiusTubesPodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. We read every email. Good job slipping that in. I'm running out of questions.
Oh, well, I mean, the game was like 3 hours long. And it's Forbidden City, Forgotten City.
Forgotten City.
And Outer Wilds, Perfect Information. You can just blitz it if you know everything.
Right. I'll refrain from using the term you don't like.
Oh, but Synchronous Ace?
No, Metroid Brain, yeah.
Yeah, that means nothing to anybody. Yeah, because there's just a box with a key, and you go into a special room, and you get the credit sequence.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Do you give it the seal of approval? Should I go play it now?
It would leave a lot to be desired. You ever travel outside of the United States to some tiny island nation and try their delicacy and think, this, insert tropical fruit skewer here, is pretty good, but it's not better than a cheeseburger, right? Mm. So you've dined on the best that our country has to offer, and the delicacy of Trinidad and Tobago is not going to replace any of your staples.
Sure. So I won't go in expecting something better than Return of the Obra Dinn.
Right.
I'll just go in hoping for a quick fix in my detective solving game desires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a hand with many fingers.
A hand with many fingers. In conclusion, does the title now make sense to you?
Yeah, because it's Michael Hand and he's got many fingers. And that's not true, but I yes, I'm just leading you on.
Very good. I like it. I'll take the reins. I did something out in the real world yesterday.
What?
Yeah. I went to a museum, the Strong National Museum of Play.
Oh, yeah.
And I got hands-on with an exhibit I've never seen before.
The Sloth Petting Zoo.
No, I toured the Video Game Hall of Fame.
Oh, good.
Recurring segment we bring to the show when we remember to mention the inductees every year.
Yeah.
We miss a year every once in a while. But yeah, I got to see it in the flesh. Cool exhibit.
Heavy Mario representation, right?
they've got a lot of projectors going on. The thing right in the center of the big room production where the Hall of Fame lives is they've got a circular podium with little desks for you and another person to come up and play games that are inductees in the Hall of Fame, but you're playing them and the video feed is projected on a big screen in front of you.
Yeah.
So I played Street Fighter 2 this way against Samantha.
Ooh.
I got wrecked pretty bad. She was Chun-Li. I was Ryu, but I'm 99% sure my analog stick was busted. So okay. That was heavy interference.
Yeah, maybe some chubby-cheeked Webster native just smashed it.
I assure you, I didn't intend to be Ryu, but I sure as hell couldn't change my character.
Bummer.
Yeah. So there was some iffy quality control on that specific analog stick, but you could play Mario Brothers. You could play various Sonic games, and it's cool that they're all just being projected on a big projector screen in front of you.
Could you speedrun it?
Could you speedrun it?
Could you see credits?
There's seemingly no limits on your gameplay, so I think so.
That'd be a fun IRL speedrun.
Just in front of a live audience.
Is how fast can you beat that game while the staff is there?
Right.
Just vacuuming around
before
you.
Closing hours.
Yeah. That's the goal.
There was a big novelty TV with Pong running on it.
Yeah.
You could play that. Behind that, though, tucked away, there was a cool piece of history where there was the original chip Pong was programmed on, but blown up and enlarged for you to actually see what's going on there and see a specific programmer's initials and where they wrote things on it.
Huh.
That was a fun novelty piece of history. The thing that maybe most surprised slash impressed me was one corner tucked away in the Video Game Hall of Fame. They created specific bespoke arcade machines, but for modern indie games that you could go up and play. So there was a retro arcade machine, but it was for Trombone Champ.
Oh, funny.
That I made a beeline for, and I had never had hands-on with Trombone Champ before, which is the joke parody of Guitar Hero.
It's a rhythm game
And that was a lot of fun. They had an arcade cabinet for Celeste. They had one for Where the Water Runs Like Wine.
Where the Water Tastes Like Wine.
Thank you, Heath. They had about 8 or 10 of those, and I was not expecting that at all. Cool to highlight niche games in such a physical,
anachronistic way.
Yes, to the general public, no less. That was pretty cool. Samantha and I, every video game we played, she won. We played big Tetris against each other. She won that as well. This wasn't a video game, but we played big Battleship. And I also lost, but I was one move away from winning. Mm. So that's almost a tie.
Do you have any tokens left over?
No tokens. Everything you could play in the Video Game Hall of Fame was tokenless. It was free.
What about...
Play as much as you want.
Is this not near the food court?
It was on the second story, so not near the food court.
Oh.
It was more or less directly above the food court.
Okay.
But we were walking through the more general video game area. We saw the things you'd expect. It was funny. We went to the educational games display section, and for some reason, a physical copy of Crash Team Racing was on display there.
Odd.
Not in browser. And then this was clearly a sponsored rotating segment. But of all the games you would think would have a big blown out room to themselves to promote, what famous strategy game do you think got the limelight at the Strong Museum of Play?
I don't know.
Age of Empires.
Oh, okay.
Age of Empires had rooms and hallways dedicated to it. It felt like the company stepped in and plopped down some money for this.
Hmm.
Because I would think you would promote Civilization before Age of Empires.
I don't know about that.
Really?
I mean, they're like Pepsi Coke when it comes to strategy.
Okay. Maybe more at parity than I realized. Anyway, I recommend it to any listeners.
You know who else plops down money is Disney when they bought Epic Games.
They own a single-digit percentage. No one was talking about it because it was so inconsequential.
Damn.
In conclusion, I highly recommend anyone in the Rochester area go take a visit to the Strong Museum of Play.
Graffiti our names on all the walls. Don't do that.
Leave our lasting legacy.
Yeah.
Heath, do you have any more updates? I can throw it back to you.
Oh, that's all the games I played that you care about.
Is there anything you want to talk about that I don't care about? It's as much your podcast as it is mine. You need to get some revenge because I am going to bring up Midnight Suns again.
Wow. What? But only because you've seen the credits.
Moratorium is over because I have seen the credits.
Now you're playing it again because it's like a Yoko Taro game and you got to beat it three times.
There is New Game Plus, but I have had my fill.
Ah.
I am so done with it for now. I have uninstalled Midnight Suns.
Whoa.
Yeah, free up that hard drive space. I guess I can transition if you want me to.
Yeah, go.
I'm all done with Marvel's Midnight Suns.
You have every card.
I've got lots of them. This has been my life for the past 2.5 months. It's been like the only game I played in 2024 so far. Final play time. And there was some idle away from keyboard time in here, I'm sure. But my Steam clock says 120 hours, which is more than I've played any game recently, that's for sure, in the past more than 12 months. Yeah, I really liked it. It stuck the landing. Act 3 did not tarnish this game's reputation by any means. It was solid throughout. None of my impressions on the fundamentals of the card play are changing in this update. I just have some funny anecdotes. Like, the story of this game's DLC. I bought the extra characters, of which there's
Deadpool,
Venom, Morbius, and Storm from the X-Men.
Mm.
And they have their own kind of like side story. You play through them in a linear fashion. And it's all about vampires.
Right.
Chris just pictured what the boardroom at Firaxis looked like when they were pitching ideas for the story of this DLC. They're like, who should the big bad antagonist of our season pass extra add-on story be? And then someone from the accounting department raises their hat.
Yes, Johnson.
We've already spent our entire budget getting licensed Marvel characters in this game. We can't afford any more. Marvel charges quite the premium. So no, we can't get any cool Marvel characters for you to face off against in this DLC. We have to get creative here. And then someone just says, okay, who's in the public domain? Dracula.
Yeah.
The antagonist is Dracula.
Everyone's
favorite Marvel villain, capital D Dracula.
That's fine, though.
Very amusing to me that now Dracula is just like officially in the Marvel canon.
It seems like it, yeah.
You face off against him several times. Man, the first few times you fight Dracula, he died like a dog for me. Most bosses, you downed them twice to finish them off. Turn one, I just focus fired on Dracula. Got his HP to zero.
You bounced him between a couple of columns.
Did a little billiards, knocked him around with some angles. When you down a boss, they take a knee and they spend their entire turn standing back up. And then it was turn two of the Dracula fight. I just downed him again real quick. Dracula, the first two encounters I had, dude didn't get to take a single action. I thought, what a pushover.
He had some dialogue, but your attack like canceled through it. What is a man?
But Dracula got the final laugh because I hit the final mission of this DLC arc and I hit the greatest difficulty spike of the game.
Mm.
Turns out when Dracula does get a turn, he hits like a truck. So the first and the final fight of this DLC, I go in. It's predetermined which heroes you have to bring. I had Blade, Venom, and Storm were facing off against him in Dracula's castle.
Okay.
He had this ability called Frenzy, which changes the standard turn dynamic, where it's no longer I do all my actions and then the enemies act. Now, instead of a I go, you go type of scenario, Dracula gets to interrupt your turn. He gets to perform all his duties after a certain number of card plays that you make. Every three cards you play, it's Dracula time. Which incentivizes you to make every card you play really count. You need a lot of utility per card play. And man, my three heroes were not spec'd like that at all.
Okay.
They had a bunch of freebie cards that I could just throw out there willy-nilly, do a bunch of chip damage, that kind of a thing. I was not tailored to fight this guy very well. Suddenly, I had to weigh big opportunity cost decisions. I would end my turn prematurely with one or two card plays remaining just to prevent Dracula from acting. Because when he did act, man, he would attack like all three of my heroes. He was sometimes instantly downing them. This put me through my paces. I had to reload this mission no fewer than four times, trying out just wildly different branching decision trees to see where I could eke out a win. It wasn't just Dracula. There were a bunch of trash mobs around him. Initial approach, clear out all the cannon fodder, then focus on Dracula. Didn't get very far doing that. Then I took a more balanced approach, take out a few key targets, and then focus on Dracula. I made it further that way, but still eventually hit just an insurmountable roadblock where Dracula was downing everyone. I was out of revives. Then I did focused fire just on Dracula right away, and I somehow managed to eke out the most pyrrhic of victories possible. It became personal at a certain point. I sunk way too much time into this fight. Honestly, I should have just backed out, sucked up my pride, lowered the difficulty, and tried again. Or at least changed the builds of my characters so that their cards were more potent per card play. But it was cool to see, because I have never been forced to see every permutation of a way a fight could go in Midnight Suns until this fight, because it was mandatory for me to do so. It was cool to see how different each individual fight really can play out. The cards you were dealt in your hand, they don't dictate the fight. It was apparent to me you have a lot of agency in how you play the cards. It's not what you're dealt, it's what you do with them. And that was interesting to see. So honestly, now that I know that I beat it, it was a highlight of the Midnight Suns experience, this Dracula finale.
I get that.
Yeah. I've also seen the finale for like the main campaign. And I liked the structure of the final climactic showdown. They found a way to incorporate, because this is an ensemble cast. You've got more than a dozen Marvel heroes you've been playing with at this point, and they each have their own deck. And the final encounter found a way to incorporate everyone, at least to some degree. It's kind of like Into the Meat Grinder, where you start with three characters, but they're throwing lots of things at you, and you're expected to have characters go down, but you could like Marvel versus Capcom tag team baton pass people switch out. So that was pretty cool. And they even found a way to place greater importance on the four-ish characters the game in its back-end calculations deems were most important to your playthrough. Whatever four characters you happen to spend the most time with and have like the greatest friendship level with, those characters got to play like an increased role in the final fight. Almost giving vibes of like a Mass Effect suicide mission.
You said it.
It's not as cool as the suicide mission, but it's cool that they found a way to elevate the characters that you probably spent the most time with in the final fight and give them their due. So all in all, I was impressed with the final fight of both the DLC and the main campaign. One head-scratching decision they made was every character they bothered to introduce on your roster of playable heroes.
Blade,
Captain Marvel, Spider-Man, Iron Man, Doctor Strange.
Milkman.
They each have their own verbose deck of cards that all have their own specific unique mechanics to each character. So I'm sure there's a lot of playtesting and rebalancing and just creative game design that goes into, okay, we have to make an entire character's new deck here and make them different from everyone else.
Right.
So it was crazy to me that in the penultimate mission, right before you're at the credits, they bother to introduce an entirely new playable character.
Oh, they pulled the Subspace Emissary Sonic.
Oh, okay. Because Sonic is introduced late in Brawl.
Yep.
They went the extra mile. They just shadow dropped a new whole guy, of which there's just as many mechanics to learn. And I'm guessing a non-trivial percentage of players got this new character, proceeded to go right to the final mission, because it's now available to you, hit credits, never bothered to use this character. What a waste.
That's why it needs to be a cool Sonic type.
Yeah, the character is pretty cool. I'll say that much.
Devil May Cry Virgil.
I decided to do just like a couple more optional missions to prolong my experience. Get to try out the new character. He's pretty cool. But what a weird allocation of resources to bother investing in like a brand new character.
It's a bold choice.
It's a bold choice. I didn't see it coming. And yeah, Midnight Suns, is it the number 12 video game of all time? Probably not. But boy, did I enjoy the over 100 hours I spent with it. It's a big Chris recommend. They even tease a sequel at the end that I sincerely doubt is ever coming, because the game was a financial flop. But I am very glad to have played it. It's not often I invest over 100 hours in a game, but this was one of the rare examples where I felt it was warranted. Boom, I'm done. I said my piece. Listeners can rest easy.
The post-credit scene is Dracula falling to his knees and then like a big Thanos-type voice says, now it's my time to shine, and it's Garlic Man.
Crossover with Vampire Survivors. Yeah. Whoa. I have a short update on one other game I've been playing.
Let's hear it.
I'm back. I took a couple year hiatus, but I'm back on the Yakuza journey.
You took a couple year hiatus?
Yeah, I haven't beaten a Yakuza game since...
You've been beaten a Yakuza
since
game.
Since the spring of 2022.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, couple year hiatus, almost.
But we've been talking about it for as long as it's been around.
I like to name drop it, just in case people haven't received the good word of Yakuza. But where I left off, I'm now back on Yakuza 3. This is a game that has not received the remake treatment. I'm playing it on PC on Steam. It has received just like a resolution bump, a frame rate bump, but it is otherwise pretty much identical to its PlayStation 3 release circa 2009, 2010. And I was expecting a rougher transition into this game than I've actually had. It is exceeding expectations.
Oh, you...
I mean, that's my experience with Yakuza in a nutshell, exceeding expectations. It doesn't look as bad as I thought it would. It's honestly, the story's, it's going to be difficult for me to talk about because it's basically just more of what I've come to like. So I don't have any new hot takes. This is a bit of a maligned entry in the franchise.
Because there's no Kiryu.
It does star Kiryu. Okay, he's the only protagonist in this game. People say this is the worst the combat system has ever been because...
No heat moves?
Of course there's heat moves, but the guys on the street you get into fist brawls with, for whatever reason, in Yakuza 3 specifically, their AI has a disposition to use a lot of blocking, which just prolongs encounters needlessly.
Yeah.
I haven't...
It's how Samantha beat you with Chun-Li.
That's how Samantha beat me with Chun-Li.
She's got a disposition.
My dark Yakuza secret is I play all of these games on easy, which mitigates the blocking problem because I'm kind of just sailing through it. I can kind of just crunch through these chumps. So that hasn't been too bad. People complain the start of Yakuza 3's story is slow.
I can't believe how I haven't even gotten a 9mm yet. I've been playing for 2 hours.
Because for a while, you're just running an orphanage.
Yeah.
And I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kiryu is now in a new environment, new island of Japan, Okinawa. And he's, it's every game.
Wait, what are you talking about? It's not
Kamurocho?
Kamurocho?
Not at the start.
Sure, it looks like Kamurocho.
You'll eventually end up in Kamurocho.
Thank God.
Because it's a Yakuza game. But for a while, you're just in less busy, less urban, less bustling Okinawa. Running your orphanage off the grid. Every game, Kiryu claims to have retired from the Yakuza life and they find a way to reel him back in.
Yeah.
Because of often real estate disputes.
Unfinished business.
Once again, it's like a land deed that's causing all sorts of trouble for him. And
he's leveling up his orphans.
For a while, you're just solving kids' elementary school problems. You're dealing with a teacher who's out to get one of your kids. You're dealing with a discrimination between your orphans.
We got secret Koreans in this orphanage?
Because some of them have darker skin. And some of the dialogue...
Type of discrimination. The not funny kind of discrimination.
Has not aged gracefully.
Oh, no.
But overall, I liked solving the plights of children. I'm now back into the crime stuff. And I'm having a grand old time. Yakuza 3, not as bad as I was led to believe. But the reason I don't have a substantial Yakuza 3 update, the reason I bothered to mention it on this show is a funny work story.
Mm.
Earlier this year, January, I was just having a standard work meeting.
It gathered around the water cooler, talking shop.
Talking shop. It's that early Zoom call meeting phase to give the illusion of office chatter. There's about a 60-second window where you can have off-topic talk before we get down to brass tacks.
Johnson's got a new barbecue recipe.
And my coworker Lee was like, oh, I rolled credits on Yakuza 0 the other day, started up that Kiwami.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going through them all. I was like, oh, wow. And I weighed in and being the old hand at Yakuza, trying to shepherd them along, getting their impressions on what they thought of the end of Zero. A weird take. They preferred Kiwami to Zero, which is...
Even I know that's...
That would fit right in on our hot takes episode. Uh-huh. But I digress. Everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Wait, which one has the... You have to slowly bring the really tall ice cream cone across the street?
Oh, I think that's three. I did that recently.
Ah.
Yeah. But anyway, I was like, give me more updates as you keep playing. And then I just went right back to my Midnight Suns playing. But, you know, months have gone by to the point where I keep getting these updates from Lee. They've finished Yakuza Kiwami. On to Kiwami 2. They like it even more. Finished Kiwami 2. I'm like, oh, God. And to the most recent update, they're now ahead of me in Yakuza 3.
Whoa.
They're already, in just the course of a couple months, Chris the Master has become the Yakuza student.
Yeah.
Lee has achieved what has taken me 5 years to do, and they're already ahead of me.
Is he doing only Critical Path?
They don't like the real estate minigame. They didn't like the Hostess Club.
Mm.
So that's a lot of my Yakuza experience, getting deep on those verbose minigames.
Yeah.
So I guess they're critical pathing it a little bit, but it just, I'm playing out of desperation to catch up.
You can't be friends anymore. You have to mute during the chit-chat Zoom meeting because God forbid he lets a detail slip.
Yeah, God forbid Yakuza spoilers are in the chat.
Yeah.
No, it was just very funny to me that I've already fallen behind this Yakuza neophyte. I am the one who is ignorant now.
Well, you're going to feel that type of way when I beat Infinite Wealth before you play Like a Dragon.
What would your take be just jumping right into Infinite Wealth?
I'd be like, this Ichiban character is crazy. I like the Pokemon minigame.
It's Animal Crossing.
No, correct.
It's both, isn't yeah. it? All right, that was my Yakuza update. I'm back on the trail.
All right.
With that, should we take a break?
Sure.
And when we come back, we'll have some hot news to discuss. See you then.
Ghost of Tsushima PC port.
Rumors are official.
Could be announced next week.
I did see that, which I was thrilled about.
You've been checking in on any of that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth?
I hear that Queen's Blood is the best Gwent since Gwent.
What? Queen's Blood?
Queen's Blood is like the trading card game you can collect booster packs for within Rebirth.
Oh.
And play all the NPCs. It's going to be Gwent all over again, baby.
Yeah.
And we're back.
Woo! Let's go, Chris.
I love it, Heath. I thought there's been enough hot news stories lately. It might be warranted in doing a state of the video game industry check-in once again.
Cue up your CNN infographic. Mad Money exclusive breaking news.
The last time we had a overarching view of the industry check-in was on episode 77 in the fall of 2022.
Yeah.
And this segment will function as a pseudo sequel to that one. I did a recent listen back just to address some points we made, maybe follow up on some things. But suffice to say, I think the entire tone of the industry is quite different, even though we're only like a year and a half removed from when we last recorded.
Hitman games have not gotten any better.
Nor have any been released.
Among other things, Silksong remains unreleased.
Here, we'll do a quick, fun check-in on things we said / predicted on that last episode.
Sure.
Heath, I need to give you your flowers because the ending question I asked back in that episode 77 segment was, can either of us prognosticate and predict what identity this period of video games is going to have? This general era, this console generation. And I think you hit the nail really on the head.
Mm.
You named that this era's identity would be called the rehash. We're doing it all over again. And I look back at all the big games last year, and remakes are in the spotlight, and a bunch of just direct, very iterative sequels. We really are just doing it all over again. I would point to the remake fever we're currently in. Man, maybe we've always been getting remakes, but it seems particularly pitched right now with one of the most anticipated games of this year is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. We're just continuing to milk Final Fantasy VII into an entire trilogy.
Last of Us.
Last of Us and Last of Us Part II got remakes?
Yeah.
Wild that that's happening. Last year, like Resident Evil 4 remake, very big deal. Dead Space remake, very big deal. Capcom is just like redoing every entry in Resident Evil all over again. We just got a very kind of critically panned as completely unnecessary remake of Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. They're like, this is barely even a visual overhaul. Why did you do this? Even games that, why are we bothering to remake Until Dawn already? That's coming later this year. Remade Until Dawn.
Just put it on the PC, please.
It is, actually. Okay. You'll be able to play it.
Metal Gear Delta. It's the Snake Eater remake.
Right. Silent Hill 2 is getting remade. It does really seem like break glass in case if we're out of new ideas. Go remake all that old shit.
Overwatch 2. I want to take credit for this prognostication, but I feel like I kind of rain made you.
I think it goes deeper than just remake fever, though, because when we look at all the Game Awards nominees for Game of the Year last year, they were all either remakes or direct sequels to things. Mm. How even like a game, a beloved game, Tears of the Kingdom, really just was, let's take that same map from Breath of the Wild, we'll throw in some brand new, very innovative mechanics, but like, wham! In some circles, it was accused of being a very large-scale DLC. Or even like Baldur's Gate 3 made splashes by just going back to the well of decades ago, Baldur's Gate. Or like Spider-Man 2 was a super safe sequel. Everything nominated, all those critical beloved games from last year, they were all really sequels. There's like not a new IP in sight.
And there won't be so long as these keep printing dollar signs.
I think it's emblematic of, we'll get into this later in this very discussion, but with video game budgets ballooning to arguably unsustainable levels, if you're going to invest $300 million plus into a new game, you need to bank on that established fan base, which is why sequels and remakes are like the only things getting greenlit. More or less.
Metaphor ReFantazio.
Hey, there's a rare one. That's a rare new IP.
That's bold, trailblazing.
It's bold. But even that, a new IP in this unproven fantasy universe, sure does look like Persona, though. Which, I mean, I'm fine with that. So yeah, I just wanted to, before I make fun of you a little bit, I wanted to say, I think your prediction of the identity was much stronger than mine.
Listen to me, investors.
The two things in hindsight that were funny listening back was, to give listeners context, when we did the last segment, I was bemoaning the video game drought of 2021 and 2022, which anyone who experienced 2023 knows it was a pretty banner year for good games, like lots of critical darlings. But at the time, we were trying to predict how long the drought would continue. You had one funny line. You did a quick cursory Google search of, hey, what's coming in 2023? And you immediately said, looks like more drought, which was not the case.
It was not.
It was like a historically good year for games. The other funny thing was I don't even know how much you believe this.
Wholeheartedly.
Or if you just threw it out there for the purposes of conversation.
I will die on this hill.
But you were like,
what did I say?
You predicted a return to an emphasis on consoles doubling down on their exclusives to foster competition between the PlayStations and the Xboxes, which is the exact opposite of what's been going on.
Yeah, Xboxes could not get off of their own console fast enough.
Yeah, they're waving the white flag when it comes to exclusivity. So that just went the totally opposite direction. As far as what I predicted for what I thought this identity of this period would be, I can't give myself much credit for it because I said we were in a transition period. But with an industry that's as dynamic as video games, I feel like we're always in a transition period. Uh-huh. So I really can't pat myself on the back too much there. The things I was specifically curious about seeing how they would evolve in this transition, and this will be the segue into, I think we should address how the different platform holders are doing right now, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo. But I was curious what the fallout of acquisition fever was going to look like. We were still in the midst of the pending
ZeniMax.
Yeah, we were hot off the heels of that ZeniMax acquisition by Microsoft.
Activision BlizzKing.
And that was pending.
Yeah.
that's enough of talking about what we talked about last time. But let's get into video games as they stand now.
They stand good.
Critically, they stand pretty great. Boy, did that drought end.
Yeah.
We ate very well in 2023. Already in 2024, I'm drowning in things to
Zelda
add to the,
killed
to
it.
The backlog. Zelda killed it. And this year, I've already got that Persona 3 remake I want to play, Infinite Wealth, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is critically acclaimed. Even the maligned titled Unicorn Overlord is apparently awesome, which comes out next week.
Vanilla Sky has a great logo, I think.
Vanilla Ware.
Oh, I did it again.
You always called them Vanilla Sky.
All right.
Suffice to say, game drought is over. I think that does prove 2021 and the first half of 2022 were so bad, mostly due to COVID delays.
Yep.
And then the pipes have unclogged now. So we're eating well. You say things are good, but I think there's a lot of cracks showing in the finances of the video game industry.
Ooh.
Because, and this has been a often mentioned talking point, last year we saw a lot of video game layoffs. And they have not slowed down this year. We had a big Sony layoff just last week.
Yeah.
Microsoft as well. They're trimming heads. And this is not my own. This did not originally.
This is a Chris exclusive idea.
I'm parroting things I've heard elsewhere. But if last year was the year of layoffs, I think this year is going to be the year of studio closures.
I'm trying to think of a studio I care about. Not Team Cherry.
Well, I think Team Cherry will be just fine because it's like three people.
All right, good.
And they're still rolling in that Hollow Knight money.
One of you is going home.
They certainly don't seem eager to release Silksong anytime soon.
No.
But Sony closed down one of their studios this year. I think it was Studio London.
Not Sucker Punch.
It wasn't one of their big ones, but it was one mostly known for their VR titles. But I think things are going to get worse before they get better. As a sign of how kind of crazy things are, let's look at how Microsoft is behaving as of late.
Like a crack fiend.
What do you mean?
They're hiding their logos. They're dunking on their loss leading platforms.
They had a very strange pre-recorded video podcast they released.
Yeah.
Where the TLDR was, four of our games are coming to our competitors' platforms, and we now know what they are.
Grounded, Halo.
Grounded, Pentiment, Sea of Thieves.
Cooking Mama.
Sea of Thieves, and Hi-Fi Rush.
Yeah.
Landing on the Switch and PlayStation 5.
Hi-Fi Rush was always meant to be on the Switch. You take one look at that game?
I'm not sure if that one specifically got a Switch release date. They might have had trouble getting it to like 60 frames per second or something.
I believe that.
It was a very strange podcast where they were reluctant to even name what the games were.
Yeah.
And then announced it like the next couple days.
Embarrassing.
And they were like, oh, it's only these four games for now. But if history is repeating itself, Microsoft had similar language back in 2016 when they were just getting started publishing their games on the PC with some early titles like Quantum Break and Gears of War 4. They're like, we're going to try a couple titles for now. And now 8 years later, every single Microsoft published game is available on PC.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a testing grounds where they're trying these four titles, see what the back end numbers look like once they start selling on other platforms. If they like what they see, they're going to open the floodgates and we're going to get Master Chief on PlayStation.
Hooray! Like I have always... I've never owned a PlayStation, so.
I guess that my takeaway is this isn't a normal practice of taking the games you own specifically and putting them on direct competitors' hardware, removing consumer incentives to buy your hardware.
The anti-Nintendo.
This is Nintendo's entire modus operandi.
Phil Spencer is like Kiryu in Yakuza 3. He's just growing these IPs to send him out into the world.
Away from his orphanage.
Yeah.
No, this is not the usual playbook. This does not follow conventional wisdom. I think it smells of desperation.
Ooh.
I think this is the writing on the wall that the big bet Microsoft made on subscriptions are the future way to buy video games with Game Pass, it's not panning out. In the same video podcast they released, they announced Game Pass subscriber numbers for the first time in something like 25 months, and they were flat, which is not what their future growth projections were aiming for.
Yikes.
So I think Microsoft's been a bit backed into a corner. Some theorizing I've heard more knowledgeable people say is Microsoft, massive company. Xbox, relatively small portion of Microsoft as a whole. Right. Their main business is Windows operating systems.
Their main business is 3D pinball.
So Xbox has been allowed to churn, you know, moderate profits and be pretty decent performing for many years. But now there's increased scrutiny on the Xbox department that they sunk that $70 billion Activision Blizzard King deal.
What do you have to show for it, Phil?
Right. Now Big M Microsoft is looking at smaller Phil Spencer and being like, let's see some returns on that investment.
Ooh.
And the only way to get those returns is to start porting their games to platforms with larger audiences, which will make Xbox more money. And at the end of the day, they're a business. They're trying to make money.
Yeah.
I just wonder, we're years away from this, when the next generation of consoles launches.
So the Switch 2.
Switch 2? That'll be coming sooner than these other ones
I'm
referring to.
That's going
to
be disappointing.
We'll talk about Nintendo, and I'm wrapping up Microsoft.
Microsoft.
But when the PlayStation 6 and the Xbox Series Super X come out in, I would guess, 2027, and consumers have to once again make that, you know, $500 purchasing decision of which plastic box do I get that is at a similar price point to play similar games. If one of those boxes, the PlayStation, is receiving Microsoft games and the Xbox is not receiving PlayStation games, aka one of these boxes plays strictly a subset of games the other one does, why would you bother to buy an Xbox?
Right.
If one is just strictly inferior.
Oh.
The whole thing with consoles to me is these boxes are already quite redundant to own more than one.
True.
They look similar, they cost the same, and they serve a very similar function. There's just this handful of titles that differentiate them. And if that handful of Microsoft titles is not there, I think Microsoft's already minority market share in the console business falls even further down.
Ay, ay, ay.
They become an even smaller player.
Can they do anything right, Chris?
It just feels like they've waved the white flag and they're now seeding ground.
You know what would save them? Hyenas.
Sega's canceled multiplayer game?
Bring it back, baby.
Pay for that Hyenas promotion.
Hyenas for 10 years.
No, I mean, 8 years ago when Microsoft started bringing their games to PC, they forced me to answer the question, why would you buy an Xbox now? And my answer was, well, I guess I don't have a reason. And now they're kind of asking that same question to PlayStation owners. Why would you need an Xbox now? I guess you never need to.
Ooh.
And yeah, maybe I'm an outlier.
You're just a hater, Chris.
But
X gang over here on this side of the table, ride or die, baby.
I'm happy to buy their games, but they have removed any compelling reason for me to buy their hardware. And maybe they're okay with that.
I have the sunk cost of my avatar. I don't want to lose my avatar.
Your Xbox Live avatar.
Been rocking it since 2006.
That is quite the sunk cost. Hey, it's not all sunshine and roses over in Sony land either, though. They've got different issues. First of all, their
eczema.
Their hardware sales are great. They're crushing it. The issue with them is their game pipeline. In the fall, I asked you, Heath, are you concerned at all that we don't know anything about Sony's first-party studios and what they're working on, except for, like, a couple?
Spider-Man,
which released. And they have some newer studios they acquired making a game like...
Astro's Playroom.
Concord. The jiggling burger game.
What? PvP multiplayer FPS?
That's right.
From Firewalker Studios?
Yes. These are not studios.
The jiggling what?
In the CG trailer, there's famously this jiggling burger.
It's a space game?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a Guardians of the Galaxy-like.
We know so little about it. But all the Sony studios you expect to hear from, your Sucker Punches, your Guerrilla Games, your Naughty Dogs, we really don't have anything announced. And
they like to surprise us like they did in 2023.
You said, oh, we'll hear something at the Game Awards, right? Where we got God of War Ragnarok DLC, that Valhalla thing. Mm. But that was it. No new game announcements.
Darn.
Our eyebrows continue to raise. And then a big Sony exec, the interim CEO, because Jim Ryan is leaving,
right,
Hiroki Totoki, in a news press release, he announced that from now until at least the end of March 2025, we have no new games coming in any of our established franchises.
Oh, are they hibernating?
That's the big question, Heath. What the hell are they been up to?
This is the biggest buildup.
Sony's taken a big L in their first party output in the entire calendar year of 2024.
But is this like a strategic L where they're like, we're going to get carried by Metaphor Fantasio?
Seemingly, it's not a bad year to take the L, it kind of looks like, because they're getting propped up by all of their third party partners, like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And yeah, Metaphor. There's big games coming.
Unicorn Overlord.
There are big games coming to the PlayStation. It's just Sony, all their studios are seemingly missing in action.
Because they're lying in wait.
And I'm just here scratching my head. I'm like, clearly this cannot have been the plan, right? You don't have an 18-month gap of release. That's never according to plan. So there's some mismanagement going on behind the scenes. I think it's just increasingly evidence of, man, if you're making the most AAA of video games, production calendars and budgets are unsustainable. The amount of money Sony spent on Spider-Man 2, they're making marginal profit on it, which is not where you want to be.
If you want to make profits from your video game, you make a free-to-play league type. Probably Fortnite too.
Yes, free-to-play games with massive microtransactions on the back end. Those are probably high-margin businesses.
They just print dollar signs. That's what Sony's doing. They took one look at their Spider-Man, and they were like, we got to go back to the lab again, boys. Come 2025, we are going to get the most Vampire Survivor League of Legends Fortnite clone you've ever seen. And Sony will finally see some of my money. In the form of not a digital camera, because that's the only Sony products I buy. That and the occasional flat screen TV. Don't worry, boys. Pal World will carry us during the gestation period.
Thanks for vamping for me, Heath. What I was going to say was the video game business on the AAA side, the profit margins are shrinking, not because the audience for games is shrinking, but because the production costs are growing and the audience interest isn't keeping pace, which means you're skimming fewer and fewer dollars off the top for profit. That's what profit is.
This just benefits the consumer, no?
Well, I mean,
we're getting hotter games for the same cost.
Right. Consumers are benefiting until there's no profit to be made, and then no one's getting any games.
Oh, I don't like that.
Sony reported its financials recently, took a big stock price hit when this bad news came out. One key metric, the operating margin in the gaming business, came in at just under 6% for the December quarter of 2023. And by contrast, that's shrinking because 1 year earlier in 2022, that was 9%. And when we're in a high interest rate environment where I can just take my money, put it in a high yield savings account online at zero risk and earn like about 4%, sniffing my own farts, not doing a thing.
Right.
And Sony's taking a $300 million risk to make Spider-Man, and their return on their investment is a 6% profit. That doesn't add up. They're assuming way too much risk for way too little reward. The cost of creating the most gorgeous games around your Spider-Man 2, they're not seeing the returns they need to see for it to be justified. And I think we're not going to see a video game crash the likes of the early 80s, but I think there's going to be a bit of a reckoning.
Ooh.
Where far fewer projects get greenlit. We see people just balk and say, no, we're not having budgets this big anymore. And maybe even need to come to terms with games settling for just slightly less amazing production values.
Oh, no, 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 no. Say it's not so, Chris.
I mean, that's...
I don't want to play those games with the plants that have lady lice sticking out of them.
Your Scarlet Nexus.
I want my Spider-Man too.
Hey, art direction can do so much heavy lifting. We love Return of the Obra Dinn.
It looks like piss, though.
So no, Sony's, despite their much stronger software and hardware sales, it's not all sunshine over there either. They have their own host of problems, like their bad game pipeline. They're just missing this year, and their worrying, shrinking profit margins. And they also slashed their expectations of future PS5 sales. We're now
Why?
In
what?
They think 2023 was like the biggest year for PS5 sales, and now it's going to be slowly tapering off until they sunset it probably in 2027. We've entered the later half of the PS5 life cycle, which is to be expected considering we're 4 years beyond the initial release.
Ah, Chris. Sounds like we're gearing up for another 2012.
2012, why do you mention that one specifically?
No, because I was like, okay, 2017 was the good year. Which year does Chris think was the bad year?
I know about 2012 specifically. Actually, the finances of the video game industry were looking kind of dire in 2012.
Chris, we're looking at another 2012.
They bounced back hard in 2013 when new consoles came out.
Switch 2, baby.
Yeah. So let's talk about Nintendo.
Switch 2 is going to be like, it's slightly HD. And everyone's going to be like, I don't know about that.
The big rumor is Switch 2 has been internally delayed. It's no longer coming this year.
Good.
It's coming in the first quarter of 2025.
First quarter?
Yeah. It's
weird.
It's repeating the unconventional release date of the Switch itself.
Oh, never mind. That did well.
It did do well.
It played in its favor.
It's kind of like the only example of it doing well. In that.
That's all I need. A cohort of one. Every statistician will tell you your sample size is unimportant.
Yes. N equals one.
Chris, I'm a 10. What are you?
On what scale?
Out of 10.
Objectively, maybe like... The funny thing is everyone rates themselves above average, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I could be contrarian and say I'm a
4
I'm
and
five.
A half. Yeah.
No, I would give myself 8. 8 is great.
There you go. There you go. That's my sample size. The average Mobius Tubes podcast host is a 9. I think that the Switch 2 needs to have more than just HD and a thicker kickstand.
What's on your wish list, Heath?
Ooh, it needs... backwards compatibility with GameCube.
I was expecting to say with the Switch. With the GameCube?
Yeah.
For all those Melee fans out there.
Yeah.
You know... I have a hard time believing this, but some rumors out there say Nintendo's finally going to play it safe, just have a very iterative next generation console. Like, there's not going to be a brand new gimmick.
Yeah.
It really is just going to be a souped up Switch.
It might as well be the OLED too.
Yeah, because there's an OLED model of the Switch.
Yeah. Remember?
Yeah. People love it.
Yeah, but it's not. It should not count as a generation.
Oh, leap. I don't think the OLED Switch is a generational.
Neither should this Switch too.
Oh, it definitely should, though, because the Switch is showing its age. Like, you're getting games ported to it, like Mortal Kombat 1, which are egregious.
Yeah.
Because it's running on underpowered 2017 hardware. We need a refresh.
We do, but we
need beefier internals.
Yeah.
Keep the same form factor.
Oh, my dock should work with the Switch, too.
Keep all your Switch game carts. Those should work.
My Joy-Cons should work with the Switch, too.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that's okay.
Just give us better internals and launch it with a new 3D Mario game.
It has to start with an O.
It has to.
Does it? Never mind.
Because of the new pattern.
No, it has to end in a Y. There's Galaxy, Odyssey. Now we need...
And Sunshine.
And Sunshiny.
Sunshiny. No, of the console manufacturers, I think Nintendo is the healthiest. I don't know if this is real. Did you hear? I saw a headline. Nintendo is Japan's wealthiest company.
I did see that.
Does that seem believable?
No.
I wonder what the metric was.
No, Toyota exists.
Right. Surely they're not the wealthiest.
Yeah. That's
maybe they have the best ratio or something.
Of operating expense to revenue?
Something like that. Maybe. But no, Nintendo's clearly killing it. My only concern for Nintendo, which is funny because they're clearly in a better space than Sony, I think with the internal delay of the Switch 2 till next year, I think Nintendo might have a weak lineup of games this year. But hey, a weak lineup of games beats no games. Isn't that right, Sony?
Yikes.
Is they're releasing, at the very least, Nintendo is releasing, they have that new Princess Peach game.
Oh.
They're remaking Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door.
And Metroid Prime 4.
That's not confirmed for this year, but maybe that could be a Switch 2 launch title.
Can I play Hades 2 on my Switch?
I would bet money that you could.
Can I play 9 days, 9 people, 9 doors on my Switch?
You can definitely play that on your DS. Overall, I think this isn't really a concern for us, the consumer, too much, but I think a lot of cracks are showing with the behind-the-scenes financials of the game industry. We might have to adjust our expectations with maybe a little bit of a game drought that would materialize, I would guess, in early 2026.
We're saying the D word again.
Where that'll be a consequence. Instead of COVID this time, it'll be a consequence of studios closing, games getting canceled, things of that nature. Budgets getting slashed. I read an interesting article where during the COVID era, there was a lot of interest in venture capital pumping into video games that is all dried up by this point.
Right.
With the high interest environment we're in. For the time being, we're still eating really well with releases. And as a consumer of games and someone who's interested with the actual artistry, that's really all I care about. As long as the games keep coming.
You're saying you'll take a 2012 again.
Yeah, 2012 had good critically acclaimed games, but bad financials. That's right, Mass Effect 3. And then the last thing I'll end on, this is more of a general thing. I asked you this in the fall, and we were both skeptical that this was actually a larger trend. Do you think enough big studios have had their hand burned on the stove chasing the live service game trend?
Because
we have some more failures to cite now. Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League came out as a big flop.
Right.
We have Skull and Bones finally came out and no one cares.
No one, you can't even chop the trees down.
I think behind the scenes, Sony and Microsoft have canceled some of their in-development live service games. Sony was doing like a new Twisted Metal game or something, but that's dead now, not coming. Have we gone through the precipice and came through the other side? Are we past the era of all these guys chasing the live service cash cows?
Yeah.
It seems really foolhardy to greenlight one in 2024.
No, you would greenlight a real game and then try to turn it into gas.
On the back end?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Kind of like how...
You're going to say the H word?
Heath?
I thought you were going
to... Hollow Knight?
How Helldivers 2 is blown up?
Helldivers.
How have you not heard about Helldivers 2? I even have normie coworkers talking about Helldivers 2.
You know what? I don't need to hear what Lee has to say about no Kiwami 5.
Oh, no. Lee's a hardcore gamer. Lee is playing the Yakuza games.
I don't need Lee's basic bitch opinion. Okay, so Helldivers looks like a bunch of stormtroopers in some yellow gas.
It's very reminiscent of Stormship Troopers. But it's the latest multiplayer craze, a game published by Sony, not one of their first-party studios, but they funded it.
I don't know about this one.
No, it's been having constant server issues because it way overperformed expectations.
Oh,
I think the future model for live service games is don't invest a lot of money into them, put things out, wait to see if it organically pops off, and then double down on
it.
Don't go in betting the farm. Wait to see if it's got potential. Like Helldivers 2, maybe.
So, it's only $40.
Yes.
Odd.
Budget price. That probably has something to do with its word of mouth success, where it's an easier barrier of entry price-wise to clear.
Huh.
Getting your friends to join you.
Because it's like multiplayer only.
Yeah, multiplayer only.
Helldivers.
I'm surprised you didn't hear about it. I feel like all the Pal World talk has been replaced with Helldivers talk in my circles.
If you say so.
Well, that was kind of everything I had to touch on.
Woo! Yeah, okay.
It's funny how different things feel compared to 18 months ago, where critically, I think the quantity and quality of game releases has really recovered, but the finances are not doing as great.
So I should play Frostpunk 2 and just clutch my pearls, worried about the state of games to come, because that might be the only game I will play until these budgets can get back into the
yes.
ionosphere.
Cling closely to the games you like in 2024 and 2025, because it might be some slim pickings after that.
Mm.
And with that, how about we close out this podcast, Heath?
Yes. If you think that Chris should play more Midnight Suns, you need only write in to MobiusTubesPodcast@gmail.com.
Man, if that's your opinion, you're free to express it,
but
I'm not going to. I'm done.
Until they release the DLC character that Chris wants to play with.
Shalila. And we can face off against other characters in the public domain, such as
Jack the Ripper, or
Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah,
Steamboat Willie.
Literally
just
Mickey Mouse, yeah.
For listeners who stuck around, I've got a fun little nugget of trivia for you. I was supposed to include this in the Strong Museum of Play segment, but I'll just sneak it in here.
It might end up in that segment.
On display behind a glass case, there was like, oh, here's every console ever in chronological release order.
Ooh.
So all the way back to the, what is it, the Maglevox Odyssey?
Yeah, Magnavox.
Magnavox Odyssey. All the way up to the contemporary stuff like the PS5. And I was just looking through them, looking at these dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And then I was just looking at the more contemporary stuff until I hit sandwiched right between the PlayStation 3 and the Wii U. Released in 2009, I was really scratching my head. What the hell is this Zeebo? A console called the Zeebo. I thought I was being gaslit by this museum.
Yeah, somebody inserted their prototype.
I didn't even confuse it with the Ouya, which was there. No, the Zeebo was targeted at developing markets such as Brazil and Mexico. Never heard of this thing.
If you've been hands-on with a Zeebo, you please write in.
Yeah, you're a diamond in the rough.
I need to know how you play the Zeebo.
Launched in 2009, discontinued by September 2011. So a short lifespan there.
Yeah, I'm kind of a Z-boy. I just all the games I want to play are on that console.
The hottest take in the debate of best console, hottest take would be Zeebo. Oh, and the fun trivia here. I guess a launch title for it was Crash Bandicoot Nitro Kart 3D. Crash Racing is back for the Zeebo.
The best way to play that game.
As the designers intended.
I almost wish that I monitored the email inbox like you, thinking if somebody did write in, I would like shadow, like hide it from you.
Yeah, archive
and
it real quick.
And be like, please, can you send me a Zeebo? And then they would send it to me, and I would have it. I would boot up Crash Bandicoot. You'd be like, why is this UI different? Why are these QTE button presses? What? This is on a Zeebo.
He's on the hunt to find an even more cursed way of experiencing Crash Team Racing. In-browser wasn't bastardized enough.
This is the Crash Team Racing iceberg is like PlayStation in browser on a Zeebo. That's a good meme template.
That's awesome. All right. Thanks for recording with me, Heath. It's been real.
Episode one. Yeah, our first of the 100s. Well, no, that was the last one.
This is
hell.
We've entered season two of the podcast.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Which one of us dies in this season?
Stay tuned, listeners.
Bye-bye.
Bye.